Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fedge.
If it was up to me, I'd dump the Israelis tomorrow.
Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody. From Amman, Jordan. I think we're live now, everybody. Okay, from Amman, Jordan. This is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, June the 24th, 2014, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and, of course, time zone south of that, and a good afternoon to evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and, of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web, or our FM and micro-FM broadcasting outlets. May all be well with you and yours. As we enter the early parts of summer here in Amman, the weather remains downright pleasant. The weather here hit a high of about 88 degrees today on a projected high of 90, while winds have been a very moderate 5 miles per hour out of the west. Yesterday, some very sustained brisk winds kept the air very fresh, but at 88 degrees, it's not as if we are overheating at the moment. Evenings, on the other hand, have been downright cool, with temperatures for the most part getting down into the middle 60s, even the lower 60s. And when you combine that with a breeze, that actually rules out a comfortable stay on the balcony in your shorts and a t-shirt, as I generally like to do. So I've had to put a light sweater on when I go outside just to relax at the, 10, 12 o'clock at night, just to stay kind of warm. However, as the week moves forward this week, we are expecting a heating trend with temperatures expected to hit a high of around 105 degrees by Tuesday before cooling back down heading into next weekend. So we're looking for quite a warm week this week here in Amman. I've been getting a lot of emails from listeners with some worry about my safety here in the Middle East, as events seem to be swirling closer and closer to the Jordanian and Saudi centers from which I operate. I can say matter-of-factly that the situation here in Jordan is difficult. People are complaining to me a lot about the cost of living lately and how life has become more and more difficult, especially for the lower middle classes here. Just the other day, I was in a taxi heading downtown, and we passed by a very small distribution center for food. This is, of course, the end of the Ramadan season, so there's a lot of donations that go out to help the needy here in Amman, as happens in any country, really, when it gets to the festive holiday season times. People do donate and give food out to people. But what was interesting about this was that there weren't any Jordanians there. What we saw were a lot of Somalis, Ethiopians, people from North Africa, not really North Africa, but more closer to sub-Sahara, like Somalias. I'm not sure about Sudan, but for sure Somalia, Ethiopia, maybe some Kenya, I'm not sure. But there weren't any Jordanians there, and that's something that a lot of the people here in Jordan have been complaining about for years and years, to be honest with you. You get a lot of these refugees coming in from Syria. I'm not going to begrudge that they're trying to escape a war over there, but they get a lot of aid and assistance and free food and free this and free that. But the local Jordanian is left essentially to fend for themselves. And when you combine that with the elevated cost that come about because a lot of money flows into Jordan, whether it was Iraq at that one time, Libya for another time, Syria. See, what happens is a lot of the elites that don't want to get caught up in the turmoil, they get out of these countries, and they, of course, bring a lot of their money with them. And that, of course, increases property values because they don't care about the price. Quite frankly, they'll pay whatever price they want to because they're wealthy enough to do that. And that's good for the landed class. It means real estate values do increase. It's good, of course, for the tax man because that's more taxes that come into the coffers for the cities and the country itself. But again, as is the case across, as we see in the West, whether it's inside of London or any city, even in the United States, that has a massive influx of immigration / refugees, the people that are getting the help are the migrants and the refugees, while the indigenous local people who have lived there all their lives really are kind of stuck out there to fend for themselves. So that's an issue that I watch all the time here in Jordan. It doesn't happen in Saudi, which is, of course, a much wealthier society. However, if you pay attention anywhere you go in the world, you're going to find poverty. And there are factions, quite frankly, in government that do care about their people and try to raise people up, whether or not it's done in the right way or with the best of intentions even, could be argued and debated in many cases. However, we do notice that obviously charity still exists, and that's something that isn't a bad thing. We would just like to see more of that charity get into the hands of locals, because it's their country, and that goes for the United States, the UK. Heck, I don't know if you heard the story, I'm sure you have, but inside the UK, you had this Grenville Tower. Now, they're selling this tower as an immigrant who purportedly lit his unit on fire on purpose. How do they know that? They really don't know that. In order to get better benefits or something like that. The reality is that this Grenville Tower, it was, 22 stories high. It went up like a matchstick, literally. The local authorities are quoting something like, or reporting something like 70, 75, 77 deaths, something like that in that realm. However, I've been following some of the news coming out of the UK, and it appears that this Grenville Tower, it was essentially filled with illegal immigrants, or a lot of immigrants, migrants, whatever you want to call them. And the death toll from eyewitnesses that are getting out that I've seen on various YouTube sites puts the death toll in that fire somewhere in the excess of over 500 people. That's right, 500 people. And now what the governments in the UK are trying to do is they're trying to move some of these quote-unquote survivors, and who knows if they're actually survivors. That's how whacked out and corrupted this English immigration scam has become. But they're trying to put some of these quote-unquote survivors, and they may actually be, but they may not be, into some very luxurious buildings. And people are saying inside the luxurious buildings, saying, hey, you know what? We work our tail off. We pay a lot of money for this. And now you're just going to give it away for free. That's the case again. We're saying the government seemed to want to give away everything. I mean, literally the country to these immigrants and migrants. But they don't want to take into consideration the actual effort and value that is inherent within the local population, the actual citizens of these nations. And the UK has a very, very big problem in that regard. So basically, everybody, to those of you who have been sending emails out to me, everything is fine. Jordan, for the most part, is still safe. Its crime has gone up, quite frankly, and that is not because the Jordanians are more criminal. It's really gone up because a lot of people can't feed themselves. And if there are any petty jealousies going on that you get caught up in, and I don't get caught up in that because I just don't associate on levels that would allow me to get caught up, and I try to keep things very low key here in Amman. you know, you're not going to have, you know, break-in robberies, things like that. But, you know, there's been a lot of complaints about the police even. And for me, again, I don't have a problem, everybody. Everything is fine. But, you know, the police are out there. They're ticketing cars that aren't parked right. And they're ticketing building owners who have too many broken bricks on the sidewalk and things like that. And the people are saying, hey, we have all of these illegal immigrants in our country. They're saying that here too, everybody. And they're breaking in, or they're maybe even legal people, but they're breaking into people's homes. They're robbing people point blank. Yet you're going to go out there and start ticketing people because there's bricks that we broke on a building last night because they're redoing the facade of our building. And you just happen to show up today when we haven't had a chance to clean it up yet. So people are getting really tired of the pettiness. And of course, in the Arab world, if people get upset enough, they do start to take matters into their own hands, as perhaps you've seen in the UK and elsewhere. So there's always a nice balancing act. It's a difficult balancing act for governments, honestly. Governments over here, at the end of the day, everybody, they're still the people that are what? The families, the uncles, the cousins of the country at the end of the day. That's really the truth. That's heck, I saw a report the other day, something like 60%. It's actually worse than America, but 60% of Saudi Arabia's working population works within the public sector. And of course, that means government ministries, etc. And these people, again, they're still the mothers, the fathers, the cousins, the uncles, the brothers, the sisters in many cases also now, of the tribes that are the country. So governments in the West, it's much different than over here, quite frankly. In the West, we seem to have a corporatized government where essentially big money buys access, it buys the actual agenda within the government. I saw something like the Democrats in a special election in Georgia this past week raised something like, I don't know whether the figure was 15 or 50 million. I'm not exactly sure what that number was, but it was an exorbitant amount of money for a special election in Georgia. And the vast majority of that money didn't even come from the districts within Georgia itself. And this is the way it kind of works here in the West. Too much money is flowing into local elections wherein that money is not even a part of the local economy, not even a part of the local people. And it's really a serious, in my opinion, of course, I try to be strong here, but in my opinion, it is a serious issue. And it's got to stop. I mean, why is California a leftist now? I'm Californian. I loved California as a place to live. We did a lot of good in the 70s, you know, with what we did with the pollution and things like that. But it's gone, like they say, it's gone too far. And why is California trying to influence a Georgia election? That's foreign money at the end of the day, because all the states theoretically are still sovereign. So if you're going to allow New York banker money, vis-a-vis Jewish money, right? If you're going to allow various Jewish organizations across the country to support various candidates because, quote-unquote, they're pro-Israel, you're allowing foreign influence in American elections. And there's no other way for you to go about looking at it because, again, every city, every country, every county, every state, at least in the United States, they have their own bit of sovereignty to them. And we should not allow, once again, foreign influence, even when it comes internally within the country. Where did we want to start here? First, you can join us in the chat. And first, good morning, everybody. Good morning. I'm kind of relaxed today. Everybody's out. I've had the house to myself today. It is the end of the Ramadan season. Ramadan is expected to end tomorrow. They should see the new moon tomorrow night. That means liquor stores and some of their verboten things here that you might like to buy as a foreigner are going to be available again. It means you can actually eat lunch during the middle of the day in public again, because that is, of course, verboten. You're not allowed to do that. For those who have a smoker's a smoking habit. You're going to be able to go out and light up a smoke during the day. You're going to be able to go out and have some shisha or argila during the day. So it's going to be a nice day. Come Monday, we're going to start getting back to normal, but it usually takes the locals about 2 weeks before they get back into the normal flow of everything because of the way the body starts to reprogram itself during this Ramadan season. But because of that, there's a lot of work. You know, the homes are getting freshened up, the girls, the women are getting freshened up. So there's a lot of work within the salons, within houses, with cooking and getting ready. It's kind of like a Thanksgiving, Christmas celebration all together. You're going to have massive family get-togethers. I don't know what to tell you. It's a big deal over here, put it that way. And I don't begrudge people, quite honestly, having their festivities. No problem with that, quite frankly, as long as they respect ours. But that's the deal. So everybody's out working, which is a good thing for me. I can take the money from their wallets and I can kind of like go buy something, I guess, huh? Since they like to do the other way around, right? We all get how that's going on. Right, guys? Let's see here. You can join me in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. You can click on that live chat button. That will get you in the door. Starting hour number two, Ola Palmagard, or not Palmagard, Ola Edamagard is going to be joining us. He is the gentleman behind the website. Where did I put you, Oli? I had you all set up, and now I'm all confused. Where did you go? Here you are. His website is lightonconspiracies.com. He's really been a researcher and a journalist for some 30 years, and he's very popular with his work on false flags. And so you're going to enjoy, I'm sure, his interview here. He'll be joining us in hour number two, and then hour number three is back to yours truly. But all in all, it does add up to 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. So again, join us in the chat room. If you'd like to call in, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. So welcome to call. Where were we here? Where's that little piece of paper, which is actually digitalized? Let's go on to Saudi, because obviously, I guess relative to the alternative media, I'm about the only guy here that actually gets a clue what's going on. You know, there's been a lot of stories. There's been a lot of stories floating. See, that's where that FL came from. There has been a lot of stories floating regarding Israel, Saudi Arabia, and I saw one with Fars News. I saw one on southfront.org. I saw one from henrymaykow.com. I saw articles even in Haaretz and elsewhere and Veterans Today that said 18 Israeli fighters came over to Saudi Arabia and two C-130s, and the purported reason for that was to prevent a coup or to help in a coup d'etat, a potential to put down a coup d'etat in Saudi Arabia. Guys and gals, if you are hearing this type of hyperbola, these are vastly disinformation sites. These are just dumb. First of all, what does Saudi need with 18 F-16s coming to their land? Okay, what's it really going to do? And then Veterans Today is, oh, well, you know, they're not going to take too kindly to Saudi Arabia strafing its own cities with Israeli aircraft, so they'll probably be put under special paint and camouflaged. Oh, come on, you guys. You guys are idiots. Okay? This is just dumb, stupid, idiotic reporting, period. It's dumb. Okay? I've personally been on many, 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 not many, 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 but I've been on many, many a Saudi base inside of Saudi Arabia. I know the people very well. I know their attitude towards the Israelis because we talk about them all the time. You know, yours truly is not somebody that's going to just cower and hide and not talk. But it, no, what, you're going to bring in a, you need Jews to save your city. You need Jews to save your country. Are you freaking out of your mind? Really, some of these stories floating out there. And then there's been a lot of stories still floating about how, well, you know, the pipeline is just not going to get built because of the term. There was never any, this pipeline to Syria, and this is why they're fighting in Syria. All of it is disinformation to hide what is more, in reality, competing forces here. The Israelis want their Yinon plan. They want to get their greater Israel. They want to be able to depopulate the Syrians and depopulate much of the Middle East. The Israelis are such crackheads. They actually believe that by creating as much death and destruction in the Middle East as possible, this is going to make Israel much safer in the long run. That is Jewish thinking. For the Saudis, it's a different story. Saudis are active. I can assure you of that. I mean, I've seen some of the purchase bids, quite frankly, for systems that would go to the Ministry of Defense. And I'm talking about weapon systems, munitions, etc. I've seen some of the quotations. I know what's kind of going on. But their reasons are different from the Israelis. See, their reasons are to stop this Shia. They see it as a Shia crescent. Well, the Israelis, and I've told the Saudis so many times, I'm saying, guys, please, you don't understand America. I know you think you do, but you don't understand America. America is two countries. America is the Zionist-occupied government country, and they're all over our military. They are all over our CIA, and perhaps more so in the CIA. They're all over our State Department. So anytime you get information from the United States, especially as it comes to intel and advice and things of this nature, you got to factor in that you're not getting advice from the Americans. You're actually getting advice from Tel Aviv. And you have to factor that into your calculus. You can't just assume that you're getting advised by the Americans. I said, then you've got the American nationalists. And that's people like me who want you to have a much clearer vision of what's going on so you don't get yourself involved in a quagmire. Look, you're a key market to us. Saudi Arabia is a key market, 28 million people. We need business as Americans. We don't need enemies. We don't need to see an Iraq torn apart so all of its money just goes to weapons. This is from an American nationalist point of view. I want to put Americans to work also. But I'm not going to put Americans to work if all I'm doing is selling bullets, because that's going to be on a bid anywhere around the country. And once they use it once, it's gone. I prefer to have tourism. I prefer to have purchases of my technology, things that could actually benefit the American people. And for that matter, you want to extend it to Germans and the British as a pro-Western person. Yeah, I can fit all of those political intrigues equally. But guys, we can't have business if we're constantly making enemies and blowing the crap out of everything, because everybody knows what's going on. So, you know, you try to advise the Saudis a little bit and you say, guys, you know, and I'm not advising government officials. I'm advising people within the community that have maybe some influence, but not a whole lot, saying, hey, look, this is what's really going on. Be careful. Be careful. Now, you've got this Qatar. How much time do I have? It looks like I've got about 3 minutes, something like that, 2 to 3 minutes. So good morning again, everybody. Join me in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Again, joining me, hour number two, Ola Damik. God, I hope I'm right. You know, this has been recommended to us from our Swedish guy. Let's see here. Where is his website? I got to pull that aside and put it aside. Press Light on Conspiracy. Yeah, his website again. Light on Conspiracies, everybody. He's got quite an extensive website, by the way. You should go check it out. Of course, we got the Cat Report coming up. Big news in the Cat Report this week. I know that's just riveting information, but a lot of you guys like and gals like the Cat Report. And then, of course, we got to pull something out real quick on the Oy Vey. I mean, we've had a lot of stuff going on. I saw something this week where even the Washington Post, of all people, no, not the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal was taking pop shots at the Southern Poverty SP Liberty Law Center, SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, which is a rabid Jewish fifth column interest in the United States. So lots of things going on, of course, out there in the politics in America and in the UK and in France and Germany. It remains quite active, to say the least. So just waiting for that break, everybody. I think it's about 1 minute away, I hope. I hope, because I need to do some scaling through my stories here. But let's see. Let me just continue on with Saudi until I hear the break button. How's that sound? That sounds like a good thing to do. In Saudi Arabia, first of all, let's put to bed as idiotic. Let's just do what you want, believe what you want. I don't care. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not gonna stress out over it. But the stories about Saudi needing Jews to come to their rescue and they're somehow going to be strafing cities. Come on, guys, please, you know, have a little bit of integrity in your reporting. If it's coming from Iran, okay, I don't care, because we all know that the Iranians and the Saudis right now are in a pretty bitter battle going on within the Middle East. So I can understand that. But for Western people to pick it up and try to pass it along as, oh, this is what's being reported. Come on, just drop these types of lunacies. It makes you look bad, quite frankly. But I guess it gives me something to talk about, so it's not so bad after all. All right, that's the break. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, Intelligent Media, Politically Aware. Good morning again, June 24, 2017. Back with more right after this. And welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, Intelligent Media for the Politically Aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Again, today's date's April. See, if you've been listening to The Fetch all these years, you know I do that all the time. It's June the 24th, 2017. So I got the year correct. It's a nice day here in Amman, quite frankly. You know, I got a call about 2 o'clock this afternoon. Saying, hey, Dennis, what are you doing? I said, you know, I got a radio show to prepare for. He says, we want to go to the Dead Sea tonight and sleep overnight, camp out at the Dead Sea. Can you make some time available? And I said, really? No, I can't, because I gotta do a radio show. So I can't do that. Sorry. Plus we're busy. So I had to turn down a nice trip down to the Dead Sea. And for a night of camping, it's very nice down there. It's like, I don't know, like 3,000 feet below sea level, something like that, 1,000 meters? Or is it 1,000 feet? I don't know. It's one of those. But it's way down there below sea level. And the Dead Sea is kind of a relaxing place to just chill when it comes to floating in that water. And I know there's a few salt and lakes around the world that you can float in, but this is certainly one of those, and it's the lowest point on Earth. So it's always kind of cool to get down there and it's just enjoy floating in the water. The water nowadays is just really warm, and so it's not really that refreshing because it's actually so hot. Join us in the chat room, Inside the Eye Live. That's Inside the Eye Live. Click on the live chat button. And love to have you in there. It's buzzing away, actually. It's the first time I got over there. Thank you for the note from Diet Joke. Says that the audio is good. Just somebody in the chat room post whether or not you heard the bumper music. That's the key thing. Did you hear the bumper music? So this is listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And what that means is that obviously we require at times for you to kind of break open your wallet, put together some, again, what we like to see at Inside the Eye Live is really a monthly donation, $3, $4, $5 a month, just to support the show. If it's $1 a month, it's $1 a show, and that goes to the network. Help the network again, because these networks are not really, they're not cheap. I know a lot of people, you hear that all the time from us, but they really aren't cheap. I know this coming month I have to pay all of my all of my expenses, and I'm not a heavy hitter at by any stretch of the imagination, but still my expenses run $400, $450 a year annually to run all the operation as far as internet bandwidth, which I got to pay next month. You add all that together, it's not cheap, quite honestly. We can't get away with having 3G, 4G bandwidth coming off of a cell phone. It doesn't work for live streaming radio, so you have to bring in a fixed wire, preferably DSL cable could be better. But you bring in the DSL circuit, that's a landline, hard fixed, monthly expense. There's no other way to do that, to put these shows together. And if it's $1 a show, yeah, $1 is only 25 cents a show. No, $1 a week would be $1 a show. A dollar a show is a dollar a show. But hey, if you want to do $1 a month, that would be 25 cents a show. That's correct, and that's $12 a year. Again, if we had 100 of those, my goodness, it adds up, everybody. That's all I got to tell you. $100 a month is $100, guys. Again, I know my expenses are close to $450. I don't know. It's maybe even more than that, but it's around $500 a month, a year, something like that. Let's see. You know, I haven't been following much of what's going on in the United States. First, let's get to the CAT report. Where's the CAT report? It is, of course, the ITIL CAT report is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post. Good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackbird's Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird Nine, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn. He is an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Spreaker. For more information, visit blackbird9tradingpost.org. That's blackbird9tradingpost.org, for more information. This week's CAT report, kind of fun. If you're not Dennis's head, the Fetch's head, you know what happens here is we got the two cats. We got One Eye, who's my big white male, and then we got Bruiser. You guys have been listening a long time. You know my two cats. But Bruiser is blind, and he looks like he got beat up. And so what he does all the time is when One Eye is sleeping, Bruiser will gently, ever so gently, come up to sniff One Eye, and sometimes he gets a little too close. One Eye gets pissed off and then just smacks him. Well, the other night, One Eye was sleeping above my head. I've been kind of like delegated out to the front room here, not the front room, but the family room, where there's a nice window because I like fresh air when I sleep. So I have a portable mattress. I put it up against the couch, and then One Eye was sleeping on the couch above my head. But it was like 2, 3 in the morning, and I was watching video, just doing some research, and my head apparently touched, not that I noticed, or the pillow touched One Eye, and One Eye literally lashed out at me, gashed my forehead, gashed the top of my head. I had to go into emergency triage here or something like that. I had to stop the bleeding. I was really bleeding kind of profusely. My head, I got a nice little hole in my forehead. And I was obviously not very happy. Once One Eye realized it was me he got and not Bruiser, One Eye knows, don't you dare mess with me, man. I'll smack you upside the head further than you can talk. But he immediately, like, he was scared. I know it was a mistake, so I kind of let him off the hook a little bit. But it's like, dude, you can't do that. And then his pattern, One Eye's pattern, is just kind of like been very simple. He kind of gets up, he goes out, he fights, gets into a lot of fights. The other day I had to not rescue him because he's fighting. But there was another very big white male cat, and he's fighting across the street inside of a empty lot across from my house. And I'm like taking off my shoe, trying to break him up. And they tore down the street, went into an apartment building, and they're screaming in the apartment building. I don't want problems for them, so I had to go in again, break them up. And I kind of like, once they got broken up, One Eye just followed me home. And then a new development, the kids now are actually watching out for One Eye. So I get knocks on my door, you know, 10:45 at night, bissa, bissa, which means cat in local Arabic. And so I have to go out, and One Eye's like hiding under the car in front of my house here. And sometimes he screams at us to open the door, but other times he just kind of hides. And so the kids now, which is kind of cool, the kids are walking to my house and then knocking on the door, telling me the cat is just outside of my door, so I can just open the door, walk down, and say, "Come on, let's go. But they've been sleeping all day. They've been having a good time. I just let one eye out because he was screaming up a storm just as we were finishing the last segment. So I had to let him out. Otherwise, I would not be able to concentrate. So he'll be disappearing soon. But nonetheless, that is the ITEL Cat Report. Again, it's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It is inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by our very own Blackbird Nine, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, who is an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can again hear Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on Spreaker. So definitely check out that show. It's got a lot of adherents already. A lot of people like the show. And now it's time for the new segment here. It is called the Oy Vey Moment. And this week's Oy Vey Moment comes from Germany. That's right, Germany, land of the perennial oppression of nationalist Germans. The German government, again, it pretty much like they're saying on the Infostormer where I took this story from, they're filled with traitors. No doubt about that. Germany, they went after something like 36 homes were raided this past week over quote-unquote hateful postings on social media. 36 people, at least, were accused of hateful postings on social media. This is as reported by the New York Times. The post reportedly included threats, coercion, and incitement to racism, whatever that means. The raids were performed by officers for Germany's Federal Criminal Police Office and mostly targeted people accused of political right-wing incitement, but also included two people accused of left-wing extremism and one person accused of making threats based on a person's sexual orientation. And this is actually a pretty big issue. I saw Theresa May, two stories about Theresa May. But anyways, let's first say to finish the segment here. Theresa May was talking about how they need to fight hate online. They need to fight this online extremism. And folks, let's be honest here. The only people that are really being targeted for online incitement, online extremism, are people within the white nationalists. I'm not going to say supremacists because that's bullcrap. In the nationalist movements, those who support Western civilization, Western European civilization, and its offshoots, that's who is being targeted here. And just last week, right after the show, in fact, Twitter suspended my account as part of their effort to, quote unquote, combat incitement and harassment. And anyways, let me get to that story. But first, that is the Oy Vey moment. I need to close it off with a nice Oy Vey somehow. I'm going to put that together next week for sure. But again, that is sponsored by grism.blogspot.com. That's right, grism.blogspot.com. Again, at Grism, they are the official archiving website for Inside the Eye Live. They are provided, at least certain members there, Zapopper and mainly, only, is provided with yours truly, actual passwords, etc. He is the official archiver of Inside the Eye Live. So again, support. They've got their shekels donation button over there somewhere. Support them also. They do a lot of good work, and it's a lot of work. Again, they download and record a lot of audio and edit it and fix it and correct it where necessary or where possible so that when you come on to grism.blogspot.com, you're getting some high quality fixed audio so that it actually flows well and listens well. So again, that is the Oy Vey moment, and it's again brought to you by grism.blogspot.com. Now we want to talk about this Twitter thing real quick, and then we're going to go back to Saudi Arabia. Just a reminder, Ola Damigard is going to be on the show as a guest at hour number 2 in about 12 minutes now. If my eyes are okay, my eyes aren't so good anymore. But nonetheless, guys, my Twitter account, I received messages from Twitter last week. What I had done is there was a Jewish group, a guy, basically was going around calling white women shiksas. And as we all know, that is one of the most vile forms of put down that Jews can give to women of any heritage, but they normally use it to target Western women. So I asked him, you know, straight up, you know, if we were to call Jewish women in this type, would this be acceptable to you? Now, the difference between Jews and we of the Western world, Jews are whiners. I don't care what you guys want to tell me. They whine. They ask for, oh, please, this is offensive. Can you delete it? Oh, please. I'm so sick of these losers within the Jewish community that really want to create a circumstance to where they are in an open debate. And I've seen this not just on Twitter, but I don't deal with Facebook, quite frankly. Guys, I have a Facebook page. I just don't deal with it all that much. But I have a lot of you, I know, follow me on Facebook, and I appreciate it. But on Gab, it's now starting on gab.ai now. Guys, this community is a whining, low-life community. I can't describe. First of all, I engage. This is what I'm being. They accused me, because it is an accusation at the end of the day. I was accused by Twitter last week of harassing people. Guys, harassing isn't involving and engaging some Jewish flake in conversation. Look, if you're going to be kind enough to waste your time engaging some vile, putrid Jewish moron for a day or so because he's such an idiot and he's just happy somebody's conversing with him because he's such a clown, that's not harassment, folks. That's engaging in conversation. And for these low-life garbage scumbags to then go and report that, what, I'm engaging in conversation with you, and now you get to call it harassment? While all the time you're filling my timeline with all of this pro-Israel, pro-Jewish garbage propaganda that's not even based in reality. And yet we are the ones who are targeted. And then you want to call it like we saw with Theresa May, Prime Minister Theresa May, saying that we need to combat extremism online. Well, I would like to start seeing really hardcore data. What groups out there are influencing what is considered online extremism? Not that it should be even an issue here, because the U.S. Supreme Court has already said, look, we're not going down this road. Free speech is free speech. Thank goodness for at least the Supreme Court giving us a good ruling here. There's no such protection for free speech, but hate speech is excluded. That the Supreme Court ruled on that this week. Yet we have these corporate mercenary outsourced public relations firms for globalist / Jewish / corporate interests that just seem to want to impose themselves and their BS ideologies, and they don't want a backlash. You know, I've seen so many calls for violence. I'm talking about literal calls for violence. Look, I don't call for violence against these scumbags. I consider so many of them, not all of them, because some of you think, no, I don't care whether you want to use the word all. We're not talking semantics here. When I hear a Jewish person talk about the German people, they don't say some Germans. They don't say, well, no, they just give it a blanket condemnation of everybody that is German. Now, you can't give Jews the right to use one form of rhetorical argument and then you deny it for the rest of us, because that is dishonest BS. There's no absolutely no reason why we should tolerate this type of framing where Jews get to use, gee, you Americans. What, we Americans? You know what? I grew up with a very rational, pragmatic point of view. Kind of, I got it from my mother. I would come home, Mom, they said this about this. And my mom would look at me and she would say, well, Dennis, if the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it. Which means if it doesn't apply to you, it's not your business and ignore it. Go on your way. So you have to ask yourself, since we have this ideology and we apply this ideology when we use words out there, when we say Jews this, Jews that, we are intending it for what we imply it to mean. Now, if Herr Uber Jew out there wants to then take my words and start to wear the shoe, is that my fault that he's wearing the shoe? Or because he's wearing the shoe, should I not consider him to be part of this subgroup I'm talking about? Look, Jews have every right in the world to not wear the shoe when it doesn't apply to them. But you know what? They always wear the shoe. Have you noticed that? I mean, seriously, have you noticed? They always want to wear the shoes. And then they want to complain when they wear the shoes. It's like, dude, you're so stupid. I wasn't talking to you. But now that you put the shoes on, okay, I'm talking to you. It's like, you know what? These guys, but they want to combat extremism. They want to combat online hate. What the hell does that mean? What, somehow you got Johnny Depp out there and a whole slew of Jewish assets. And when I say Jewish assets, what I'm referring to are people in the media, people within the entertainment community. These are assets of a Jewish-controlled industry, everybody. They're Jewish assets. Jews make money with these assets. I don't care if it's an actor, an actress, a newscaster, a reporter. If they're working for these Jewish operations, they are an asset of the Jewish community at large because that's the way they wear their shoes. And I can't tell you how many times I see them call for violence against people. We haven't punched enough Nazis today? The very word Nazi is offensive. Who are you? How dare you call me somebody who doesn't see what's going on? Screw you. I got a clear picture of what's going on. But see, they want to start, look, I'm going to dehumanize you from step number one, and then they want you to punch yourself out of a pit that they presume you that you're in. Hey, I'm not going into that pit anymore. And neither should you. It's a match. Coming up next, the Live Intelligent Meet for the Politically Aware.
We are having a nice day here in Amman, quite honestly, very quiet, and I like it that way. I've had the house to myself, and after living in Saudi Arabia by yourself for so long, quite honestly, I've learned to like it. I kind of enjoy it. So it's nice to have the house, actually my own house to myself, not some hotel room in Saudi. Now, we've tried to check in with Ola. He checked in about 4 hours ago. Everything seemed to be okay, but as I try to connect here, it doesn't seem to want to connect. I'm not sure if he's actually online now. Let's see here. Ola, are you available? Call failed. It seems like either he's bailing on us or he's just not available. Not sure why that is, but remove person from this group. Okay, so basically, guys, Ola did check in today about 2 o'clock. We agreed at 4 o'clock. It would be 4 hours from that time, but he is not here, so I don't know what to tell you. Let me see about the conversation real quick. I want to make sure I did this right. 254, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, maybe he's going to be on. No, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, maybe he's going to be here at 7 o'clock. So maybe we're going to bring Ola on at 7 o'clock, everybody. Maybe I made a mistake, and he's out and about, and I made the mistake. 2, 3, 4. Okay, it looks like I made a mistake, everybody. So, okay, let's assume Ola is not bailing on us. He's just off because I told him 4 hours, and it wasn't 4 hours. It was only 3 hours, so maybe that's my mistake. Let's see. You know, I've been following this Grenville story. Let me get into the Grenville story a little bit. What I've learned about the Grenville, if you're not familiar with the Grenville story, Grenville is the cladded building that was burned up to a crisp, literally, in London, or well, not really London, but in the UK somewhere. One, I forget the city, but nonetheless, it burned up. And what happened was the media, the fake media, the BBC and like, have been putting a number, a figure of about 78 or so. And of course, it's actually much more than that. It's probably close to 500-600 people. So to those of you out there, and it was said that this was largely populated by mainly illegal immigrants. So, you know, I've seen a lot of anti-Islamic vitriol, and I'm not against it necessarily, guys. I'm just saying I've seen it. One of the guys coming out of the stories of the UK is this guy by the name of Tommy Robinson. He's, I guess, one of the former heads of the English Defense League. And I found this guy rather fascinating to follow a bit on Twitter, because he doesn't really seem to be pro-English. He really seems to be anti-Islam, pro-Israel, pro-Jewish, which it makes him kind of a operative in my book. Here's a guy, he's talking about and whining about all of these anti-Semites everywhere. He wants to rant and rave about how all this Islam is taking over the UK, but he doesn't want to deal with the main issues, which are then these Jewish groups. Then we get into Grenville, and we get into this idea of, you know, 500-plus people burned to a crisp, most of them Muslims. Well, what has Tommy been cheering this on? I'm just curious. Hey, you got rid of 500 in one swoop, dude. But what we've learned is that, and I've hinted around this quite a bit about this immigration crisis. It's really a real estate gambit. It's a way to keep property values elevated. You keep supply artificially short because you keep flooding countries with people. Look, the immigrants don't care if they live 15, 20 to a house. Everybody combines 10, 15, $20, 20 pounds, 30 pounds, and they'll all sleep 20 to a room if they have to. It's the same here in the Middle East, everybody. You know, they'll bring in Egyptians here and they'll pay the Egyptians the equivalent of maybe $350, $400 a month. But you're not going to get housing for $350, $400 a month. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So what do? They have no choice. They have to find roommates upon roommates upon roommates. And it's not like we don't see this going on in America also. How many people in America have to live with roommates all the time? I couldn't handle it. I honestly couldn't handle living that way, guys. I'm too much of an individualist. What am I going to put myself in a situation where I got to live with a bunch of roommates? So what the UK did, and from what I'm hearing, is the European Union donated to various local city councils in the UK about $1 billion, €1 billion. This money got set up into these local communities, government, local community, quasi public, private corporations that manage real estate properties. And what they did is they set about destroying something like 6,500 plus British buildings. That basically was part of the heart and soul of what it meant to be British and the UK. And they created this Unitarian, ugly, communist-style building retrofits all throughout England. And that includes Cornwall, for those of you familiar with our discussions in Cornwall. Imagine billions of dollars, folks, being flooded in. Companies are making millions and millions and millions of dollars, pounds, euros in retrofits. But none of this could be possible or would be possible possible without the excess money being brought in from the European Union. And all of it is designed really to start displacing the older British generations, those that had come to closer to retirement age. They did not have enough money to actually fix up their properties. There was nothing wrong with the properties. They were actually pretty good, but they just wanted this unitarian, communitarian, it's being called, this communitarian movement, to essentially destroy the community so that a bunch of developers and builders of real estate property could make money. And they've been doing this now for something like 20 years. And every time there would be questions raised about the fraud or the safety or the quality of the work, rather than listen to the actual tenants inside of the UK, what the British councils were doing, these city councils were calling in the police to threaten them, threatening them with lawsuits if they kept talking. So what you end up with is eventually something like Grenville. And one has to wonder if that was really arson, because the way it went up, it sounds very, very suspicious. This idea of communitarianism, from what I understand, and I still need to research this even more and just kind of dropping it for your education to get started on the topic here, is that you have a movement whereby these various globalist factions, we call them Jewish here, but let's be fair and call them globalist because they include a lot of corporate entities. One of the things that they want to do is destroy the nation state. It's why it's very important that when Donald Trump says that the nation state remains that one entity to secure the wealth and well-being of the people and to ensure the happiness of the people, that it must be preserved, understand that there is an actual war going on between the communitarianism, which is trying to create these like nation state communities, and the larger issue of the nation state itself. So when you hear about America, we hear a lot about this idea of something's called sanctuary cities. Understand in its own way regarding this larger battle between the nation state and this globalist faction that seeks to destroy any and all property value, not property value, but property ownership within the West. Part of this communitarian agenda is to use individual powerful cities, like maybe a Chicago or a Los Angeles or a San Francisco, to undermine from within the very structures of the powers of the state. Consequently, now carry this further into the idea of the franchise. The franchise is your right to make change possible through the ballot box. Now, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's never been easy. It's a lot easier when you're starting and you have an advantage from the beginning, but it's not easy. So now we're getting word that there was something like 5.5 million illegal votes cast inside of the United States. Now, this leftist, Jewish, liberal loon brigade would like you to believe that somehow, because of the popular vote going to Hillary Clinton or to Barack Obama, that somehow they deserve to have this power that they see slipping from their hands day by day by day. Let's be honest, folks. The lunacy, the sheer deliberate, because they plan it, lunacy that we see going on inside of America right now with these leftist campuses, these Jewish professors on campus, and what they're teaching, and states now saying, hey, there's more than two genders. You know, now we have three genders. Do you realize in America it has gotten so absolutely insane that states themselves have declared that, and I don't have the list of the states, but I saw it floating through my timeline, states themselves are creating a third gender on their driver's licenses. Now, at some point, what we understand, or we should understand, is there is an agenda to absolutely change the structural foundation of Western civilization. You don't see this nonsense going on in Japan. You're not going to see it going on in Russia or Saudi Arabia, for that matter. You're not going to see this nonsense. You only see it where we have a proliferation. How's that? That's a good word. Where we have a proliferation of Jewish ideology and Jewish power upon the larger population. And mind you, this is a hyper minority people. They have a lot of chutzpah to be doing it. So something to watch out for is, and I'll have to research this more, is this idea called communitarianism. Again, using powerful cities, networking these cities together into a political power structure that then seeks to challenge not just the power, but the validity or the sovereignty of the nation state itself. My point on this is, when I see a city out there talking about how we are a sanctuary city and we are going to protect our illegal immigrants in our nation state, to me, that is a form of sedition. Now, I'm not in power. I don't understand all the levers of power. But I'll tell you what should be done. They should be absolutely rounded up, arrested, tried for treason, and then shoot them. Literally. Same with anybody involved in illegal voter registration drives, enabling illegal voting. Imagine 5 million citizens, their votes don't count because of 5 million illegal voters voting, and then Jews want to talk to us about how, you know, we're just jealous. And yet Jewish groups, and probably those making these comments, know precisely what's going on. Here's what I despise about certain Jewish leftist groups. They say they need to combat hate online. They need to combat speech. They need to combat this. They need to fight this. They need to always keep and limit people's ability to talk. You know, it's nonstop. And I thought to myself, obviously they're projecting. So their intent is to what? To harm. Their intent is to cause problems. Their intent is to cause, in many cases, even sedition. It's kind of obvious. I mean, Johnny Depp or whatever his name is just last week calling for the assassination of Donald. Now, in all of our time, not that we're a big fan of Barry, we're saying, look, this guy is there. I'm talking about Obama. We were saying, look, this guy is in office illegally. This is treason, but they're so powerful, we can't stop it. There's something about that network that just is untouchable right now. But everything about Obama was false. But nobody's calling for his assassination from our side. We're saying, let's get the rule of law to actually work. See, we already have a rule of law. We're just not applying it. We're just kind of like applying the rule of law wherever we feel like it's necessary to what? Combat hate? What's that? That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. I look at this agenda going on with this leftist side, and they call out for violence. But how many times How many times have you seen somebody call you an anti-Semite? How many times have people called you a Holocaust denier? How many times have people called you a racist? How many times have you been called a bigot? And all these other terms that they want to apply to you guys. And especially when it comes to issues like Holocaust denial or anti-Semite. Do you realize what's going on here? You have a set ideal or a set form of beliefs. We all know that Treblinka never happened. It didn't happen the way they sold it. Many of us know that the Allies under the Jewish general, Eisenhower, starved millions of German soldiers after the war. Not hundreds of thousands, folks, millions. What many of you don't know is that when you see all of these emaciated bodies paraded at Bergen-Belsen, those weren't Jews, folks. Those were German soldiers. The people, this was a staged propaganda campaign. They needed to get the bodies out there so that you could believe the big fairy tale, but you didn't know, and you don't care to know, or you just don't want to look and see that those were actually German soldiers who were murdered, starved to death after the war, and it was all a propaganda parade inside some of these camps. Yet you know this, and yet they continue to call you the denier. And what are they really employing here? They're employing a tactic called gaslighting. They're trying to get you to believe in something that you know is not true. And they will gaslight you and gaslight you and gaslight you. And then they want to accuse you of being violent. They want to accuse you of being the extremist here. Get a handle what's going on, folks, because at some point in time, as we saw, 36 Germans are now put into jail just this past week. Well, guess what? That's where the war's headed. If you read Talmudism, if you read the Noahide laws, if you read your protocols of Zion, The strategy is very clear. They believe this power structure believes that it can control your behavior through literal fear of prison, fear of incarceration, fear of what they can do to you. That is one of their modus operandi. So they can gaslight you all day. They can basically, that's what they're doing. They're gaslighting you. They want to sit there and they, you know, and I've seen comments about how Jews are bragging. Guys, Jews are bragging about how many tens of millions of people they killed. And somehow they want to say, we're the ones promoting extremism. We're the ones promoting hate. You know, look, when you sit there and you take so many accounts, like mine, for example, on Twitter. I'm a nobody. By the way, we reached 1,000 followers this week. I found it rather ironic that the week that I had my account suspended, it is not terminated yet. It's supposed to go live tomorrow. We will find out. I don't know how many hours it has left, but it's probably within a day or so, a day and a quarter. When you keep banning these types of things, what are you doing? You're just waking people up. You're not shutting people down. To give you an example, there was a video released just this week, I believe, on YouTube. And it was entitled, Not Just a Refugee. Really, not just a refugee? Do you realize this thing had over 300,000 plus downvotes within a week? Because people are fed up with it. Every time you ban an account, That's the more people you wake up every time you suspend somebody under false pretenses. And I've now learned, thanks to Von Hash, who might be in the chat room today, that all of my tweets were being read, or at least were being fed into Baha'i B'rith and the ADL and some of these other hate-mongering Jewish organizations. Every time that they continue to go after people, well, what are they telling you? They are telling you that we only will allow you to say what we tell you you're allowed to say. What adult man, woman out there actually abides by that? You're not a kid. You're not a baby. You're not under, oh, yes. What, you're supposed to look up to this little Jewish guy and say, oh, yes, sir. Oh, whatever you say, Juby. Come on, dude. Grow up. Really grow up. You know, all of the lies I see coming from the Jewish community, coming from this leftist liberal agenda, all of this promotion. You know, I saw a chart the other day about hate crimes. Hate crimes. You know, crimes actually committed against people. Number one was Jewish. Oh, really? There's not even that many of you, you freaking morons. There's not that many of you. Next was Muslims. Next were Southeast Asians or something like that. And then the last was like 19% other. Really? We have an epidemic of black on white crime in America today, and yet there isn't even a category for hate crimes, if you're going to label things as such, against European people. You're not even going to label it. You're going to pretend it doesn't exist. And yet, what, we're supposed to go home and talk to our wives and our daughters and our sisters and our uncles and our cousins, and we're not supposed to talk to each other about what's going on? And then Theresa May is going to say, oh, we need to do more to combat online extremism. They're not talking about combating the eyeline. More.
Dennis.
Cornwall. Graham Hart. He's been following the Grenville story also. And Graham, of course, has been on Renegade and a few other networks. He's given those here, but don't ask me to keep those in my head. In fact, inside the iLive.
Hi, Dennis. Like, hi, Dennis.
What you doing? You like shutting doors and like keeping the cats out or something?
Dennis.
Yes, I am here, Graham. How about you?
Well, I'm getting huge.
Following the Grenville story, also. Hold on, let me try to turn this down. How about
okay,
there?
It's okay. I have the player running here. We're good now.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
So it was you. It was you not doing Radio 101, and you kept your radio on.
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness for that. I thought it was me.
Yeah, it was my fault. I thought I was turned off, my friend, but I was still running. And the wife just
okay, good.
Me on the shoulder.
That's a good thing. Because otherwise I can't monitor crap. And I'm
how you doing, friend?
You know, I'm doing great. You know, it's great to be home. The girls actually just came. I'm hearing feedback now also from you. So maybe your mic is, no, your headphones may be a little loud into the headphones also. Maybe.
No, I
just maybe.
Yeah, I think I'm good my side, Dennis.
Really? Is your headphones aren't like playing into the microphone?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Okay, then I don't know what to do, and I'm just going to panic and try to get through this segment. let's see. Wait, I can do this. Yeah, I can do that. I got so many ways to turn things up and down. You know how studios are, Graham. It's like, you know, sometimes you hit the wrong one and it can screw the whole show up.
Oh, tell me about it. All the time.
I've put everything down to the feedback is gone, and then just cranked up my headphones so I can hear you again. So how's that?
That's good. You're sounding great. I hope you're sounding good.
Are you enjoying Inside the Eye Live, dude, or what?
Very much so. Very much so, Dennis, especially when you was talking about the good Jew, bad Jew situation earlier, which I thought was very interesting indeed. Now you compared it with the Germans. But I enjoyed, enjoyed the show very much. Sorry, Ollie's not turned up. But I have been watching the Grenfell case, Dennis, and it's a big story here. It's a very big story.
Here they're trying to, I think it's really big because it's highlighting really this immigration scam, the money flowing in to support immigration. There's a lot of stuff going on there that's subsurface that they need to keep under the surface. Otherwise, this whole thing may blow on them. Are you reading the same from what you're starting to read here?
Absolutely. I think it's got a long way to go yet. There's a lot more information to come out. But the people on the ground are not being fooled. And I'm seeing a lot of people wake up from mainstream media now because they know full well that the facts are not getting out there. I think you mentioned earlier, they're announcing 79 deaths. There's 500 There's 500 people died in that fire. And it's the most expensive real estate in the world. I personally, up to this point, I thought that Kensington and Chelsea was just a complete posh area, you know, for the rich people. I didn't know there were sections of that area that still had working class people living there. So these high-rise buildings are the most expensive, are built on the most expensive, the most sought-after land in the on the planet. It's the richest land on the planet, and they want these buildings gone, Dennis. There's a lot of high-rise buildings there. This one was cladded. I mean, it was a fire. It was set up to be a fire. The residents have complained. They've got their own blog. I haven't got it to hand, but they've got their own blog where they've been complaining to the council about the fire risks there for years, at least 2 years. And it was recladded last year, and they spent something like $10 million on it. And they did basically nothing. The standard of workmanship was appalling. The residents complained about it. But what we've been getting on social media the old media, Press TV have done a good job, as they call them there here now, Press TV UK. And they've been getting some great interviews out, talking to the residents, Dennis. They're bypassing the commentators, because that's all they are, commentators. They're not finding out nothing. They're not speaking to people. And when they do, they cut them off short. But people are like, Press TV have gone in there and they're speaking to people and giving them the platform to say whatever they want. And they are really, they know what's going on. They know there's something deeply wrong here. The way this building went up, it went up in 15 minutes. It was engulfed in flames.
Yes. And I think a week ago or something like that, I talked about how we had the interview, Press TV saying, where are the victims? I don't see any victims.
No, they're dead. There's one lady.
And so they keep talking about all these victims, but there's no victims. They can't even provide us a list of how many people live there.
Well, that's
legally
absurd. Yeah, you've only got to look at your council registration. There's bound to be so many people that are registered to that building, and yet there's no list, no names. I mean, it's a total cover up. But the people aren't having it, my friend. They're not having it. And
how much did that property cost rent out?
I've no idea. But working class people are there.
America, we have fire hazards. Like, you have occupancy ratings, and it sounds to me like that building was massively over occupied, which also then puts your fire department saying, okay, why did you allow this building to be so over occupied?
Yeah. But the main thing is that the way that it was cladded, how could a fridge fire on the fourth floor start, light the whole building up? Once the flames got outside to this cladding, which is very flammable, within 50 minutes it had engulfed the whole of the building. So the residents never had a chance to get out. And they were told this. They were told that the protocol was to stay in their own room. I mean, how crazy
is
that?
It's like basically saying, stay here so we can burn you to death. Well, I heard on one report that 50 people were found dead on one of the stairwells.
That's correct. And there's another 42 that were found in one room. So we've already gone over the figure of 79 that they've talked about. But one lady who was interviewed said she came down with all her friends because she knew the area. She came down, friends came down from across the UK. They gathered a tremendous outpouring of grief and of charity from the people of the UK. They sent down clothing, food, everything they want. And when she got there, she said, where are the victims? All I'm seeing is people going around with missing written on their T-shirts and other of their family relatives. But all I'm seeing is helpers. Where are the victims? And they've set up holes, and there's no one in them. There's no one in them. And so they've got all stuff.
I saw Theresa May the figure that they're going to release like 5,000 pounds to the survivors. Well, where did you come up with 5,500,000 pounds for survivors here? And you don't even know who survived yet. So, again, even the government looks like they are just in spin mode trying to cover. Yeah, we provided this, but okay, where are the victims? Let's start with the victims, guys. How'd you budget 5.5 million pounds?
Sure. And they're absolutely right. And none of the figures add up. Whichever way you look at it and work out how much, if they're going to give 5,000 or whatever it is to each house, or I don't know, I forget what the figure is, but they don't add up. And everything they do, none of it's adding up, Dennis, and the people are seeing it. And this is going to run. This is a huge, when you get disasters like this, as horrible, it's just horrific, but it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity now for people to see, and it's woken up thousands in this country, thousands. And the people around West London, they're talking to the press, and they're coming out of the stores. So we're hearing, for the first time, we're hearing directly from the people on the ground, the people who live there, the people that know everyone in the flats. And what they're saying and what the mainstream is saying is a joke. And after the third day, last week, we were back to Brexit. And it was like Grenfell never happened. Well, the people are not buying that. They're not going to have it. So this has got to run a long time yet. Again, we need some figures, Dennis. Everybody's asking the same. We need some figures. Where are the victims? How many died?
Yeah, and
it's a joke, man. And everyone can see it.
Yeah, I heard the company that put that adding together, they somewhat.
I'm getting feedback from your side.
But the cladding, you know, they took their work right offline. They're saying, we didn't do this, you know. Before they were like, we did the Grenville cladding. Now they've disappeared.
Yeah. Well, they want it down, Dennis. They want that down. They want that real estate. They want that land. And they want to take down the other tower blocks in the area because they're not safe. But they want the land. Because, as I said, it's the richest area on the planet. So that's what the towers are wanted for, my friend. So we'll clad this one and burn it down. Maybe they made some sort of sacrifice. I don't know. There's another thing also, because of the cutbacks in the fire brigade, there's a high ladder, one which goes twice as high as the one they had at hand. They had to bring that in from Brighton. Can you imagine that? The richest city in the world didn't have a ladder to cope. They had to bring it in from Brighton the day after. What use is that? I mean, it's just disgusting.
You can't even use it.
No.
Okay. I want to shift gears real quick. The Queen, with new government, just got announced this week. But the Queen was not wearing her crown.
Correct.
And there are constitutional issues I'm hearing about this in the UK, that she basically wore a blue bonnet type of hat with some gold type flower, you know, in the petal part, not the petal, but the center, the fistula. And basically the fact that she was not wearing the crown is a sign that says that this government is rogue, that it's kind of like this is a statutory issue relative to the way you guys are supposed to change your governments. And if she's not wearing the crown, she's not representing the British people.
Even more so, Dennis, she was wearing a blue hat with yellow stars. It was an absolute replica of the European Union.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So essentially what she's saying is that we have a rogue government now running the United Kingdom.
Absolutely. It's a coup. It's a conservative coup. They, I didn't know this until last week, but you have to wear the crown. I followed this story as well. But when you look at it, she's wearing the hat of Europe. It's a European Union flag she's got on her head, for Christ's sake. And yes, you've got to have the crown on to make it an official government. So this government is a rogue government, as you say, Dennis. And then she was off to racing down at Ascot, because that is Royal Ascot Week. So we don't want to be missing the horse race.
It's not country anymore. I'm going to watch the horse races.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just incredible, the coldness of these people. But yeah, you're right. This is a constitutional issue as well. But it's not, of course, this is not in the mainstream. They have no idea.
Yeah, Graham, how many American Los Angeles reporters in Amman would be able to pick up a story like this?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Not many.
No, no. But I would ask people to keep an eye on this story, because this is going to run. People are not going to let this go. They've seen it. And another thing, Dennis, is this is really, it's quite interesting. It's actually brought people together, Muslim and white. And I hear you.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, I'm hearing that on this.
Yeah, it has brought people together.
This disaster was such that everybody had compassion and empathy. And they were all working together around this, because they saw this could have been us also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And another thing you mentioned earlier I wanted to comment on was Britain First, Tommy Robinson. They're trying to turn that into I think they're going to be a political party now, this Tommy Robinson. He is he's stirring it between the Muslims and the whites. I was watching what he's been saying, and then he came out with a statement and says, it's all the Muslims, they are attacking the English and the Jews. I went, hello, it's the Jews as well, we're being attacked. I said, well, we know where you're coming from, pal. I don't trust him.
Yeah.
He's no good.
He blew it. He was being recommended as a guest here. One last issue for you in the UK that you're dealing with that the audience should know about is the issue of the British military. There's a huge effort right now to blend and merge the British military in with this EU military. And if that happens, the UK will effectively lose control of its own military and all of its assets. The UK will not really be a sovereign nation anymore. So you've got a rogue government. You've got massive problems with this immigration issue, which I've always hinted was around this real estate issue. And now you've got a situation where your military is being negotiated away, and people aren't really aware of what's going on here.
No, I agree, Dennis. I agree with you. You've said it all. People are not aware. The military is being taken away. So, you know, we're defenseless. We're defenseless against Europe.
Correct, correct.
I don't know where that's going. Sorry.
Yeah, you're defenseless, period, because you won't have a military. The Falklands, you can kiss it goodbye, because you will not have a military even to defend it if you wanted to keep it, because the EU will make that decision, not you guys.
Yes, even though we're supposed to be coming out of Europe. But will we come out of Europe? I don't know. That's going to be interesting to watch as well, as these Brexit negotiations are ongoing. But at the moment, I think from a humanitarian point of view, the people, they're more interested in Grenfell, and I don't think they're going to let it go. I hope not, anyway, because this is a huge opportunity to show these people for what they are. They are evil. I don't know, Dennis, I think this could even be some sort of ritual.
I suspect also, because it makes no sense that a kitchen fire would end up immolating 500-plus people in one big candle. Guys, I don't know if people of the audience have seen the pictures here. That thing was a Roman torch. It was a candlestick just lit up on fire. Of course, it didn't fall down in its footprints, which tells you about 9/11 also.
Oh, no, that's been mentioned as well on the alt media. It's almost hilarious the way it burnt. But it didn't fall on its own footprint, you know. And this, again, I think will make people more aware. They might go back and start looking at 9/11 now. I do think it's opened a lot of eyes, Dennis, and I do think an enormous amount of people I woke up in the UK this week to say something's seriously wrong here. Why are you not given the most basic figure? How many people were in the building? We've got the names. I mean, you get a terrorist attack someone in London, allegedly, and they got the name within 24 hours. And here we are with a tower block with 500 alleged people, between 500 and 600 people that live there, but no one's come out with a list. It's ridiculous. And people can see how ridiculous that is.
Have you heard about this term, communitarian agenda?
And again, please, Dennis?
Yeah, have you heard the term communitarian agenda?
No, I've not.
Okay.
No, I've not.
I'm hearing this term brought up by the people at UK, what's it called? UK, what the heck?
UK Column?
The name of the outfit. UK Column, yes.
Yeah, UK Column are doing excellent coverage of this. They're giving
amazing.
Yes, tremendous.
Everybody, if you haven't listened to UK Column, okay, since you know about them, I've been watching with almost rapt attention when I go to bed. I put them on. It's a 47-minute video, YouTube, and it's well done. I'm actually starting to tire a little bit of their style, but it's still well done, and the Grenville coverage was absolutely amazing.
Yes, it is. I met Brian at Brian and Mike at AV8, a big conference they had back in Milton Keynes back in May, and I've known Brian right from the start. Probably he's the first guy I met when I woke up, but he's a good man. I like you, got bored with the style and moved away from it. But since the UK, Grenfell Tower disaster has happened, I've been watching the UK Column, and the coverage has been superb. Absolutely superb. Yeah. I can't recommend it enough for people.
Yeah, exactly. Watch it like June 16, 15, 16, 17, 18. Watch those episodes. It will be 2.5 hours, well, 3 hours, really well worth your time. And I would like to have Brian here to talk about it in detail, if you can talk to him. I would love to get Brian here.
Yeah, I will try and do that for you, Dennis, without doubt. I'll do that in the week, my friend.
Okay. Thanks for coming on.
It's been good to talk to you, Dennis. Thank you so much. Going back on air soon, I hope.
Thank you. Ola is now in the house, everybody. We'll have Ola Damengard right after this. Welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Now, we got things lined up again. That was my mistake earlier today. Let me pull up Ola's website here. I think I cut it because you weren't here, Ola. Ola Damengard, everybody. He is, I believe, the winner of the 2016 Prague Peace Award. He can correct me on that. As well as a noted speaker, and his real interests and efforts are in false flags. I don't know where he's joining us from, but joining us now is Ola Damengard. Ola, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you so much.
I got you. Good. You're not feeding back. I moved you over to a different circuit, so I didn't get the feedback because it was really rough with my last guest, Graham Hart, over there in the UK. Ola, where are you at?
I'm living in the south of Spain since the year 2000.
But it's Ola and not Ola.
It's Ole, but right? Yeah, it's a bit like the Spanish Ole, but it's actually a Danish name. But whatever starts with an O and ends with an E.
You're very, very well respected, of course, in the alternative media. So people were joking about that in my chat room today. Saying he's Swedish, but it looks like Ole. Anyways, all the welcome. Great to have you. You and I go, we don't go back, but I know you for a long time used to appear on Red Ice Radio. And every time I would be on Red Ice Radio, I would check the numbers and stats, and there was always Ola Damigard, always there. I would see your name pop up. So it was that's how I actually got to know you, was through the Red Ice efforts that you did. But I've listened to some of your work recently, Ola, and you've been doing some really good work on the false flag side of things, which is, of course, something that's very important for people to understand. But real quick, tell us a little bit, for those who don't know who Ola is, tell us just a little bit about you, because not everybody knows who you are.
Well, I was born in Denmark many, many years ago in a family that was very involved in the Danish resistance movement, in the underground movement during the Second War against the Nazi invasion. And I grew up with a lot of the stories about how, even though you're in the minority of one, or you're really very few against a very superior enemy, that you need to stand up for what is true and right. And then we moved to Sweden when I was a kid, and I grew up there and started working as a journalist. And so it was around early, I think maybe late 70s, that I started waking up to the fact that something very weird was going on in the world. And so I got extremely interested in the JFK assassination, which is, I mean, once you see the headshot in the Zapruder film, very obviously showing that the final headshot came from the right and to the front somewhere in the grassy knoll area, and not from where the official story says that Lee Harvey Oswald was located. So it was very obvious. It was like a no-brainer that the official story was a lie. So the big question was, why were we being lied to, and why are we being lied to, and by whom? And that took me down a very, very long road for some 30-odd years, where I devoted a major part of my life into exposing the dark forces that are behind so much mayhem in the world. And here we are today.
When
where
you call these...
Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead. You go ahead and finish your thought.
No, and over the years, one of the things that I started focusing on first and foremost were major assassinations, top assassinations like JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and so on, not having any idea that they were connected in any way or form to start with. But over the years, I found very strong connections in the team that carried out these operations. And also over the last, well, it must be like 8-10 years, I've really come to see how important these false flags operations are, and psyops, in how to control the population, how the few in power can control the masses through these psyops and state-sponsored terror acts against the population, scaring us into obedience so that we will accept their agenda, their very raw and very rough, brutal agenda. And so here we are today, where there are more false flags than ever. They're just ramping up the speed on a daily basis. So I'm doing everything I can I'm sorry, yeah,
you've
delays.
Been on record. Besides exposing, is there still a delay?
Not now, maybe.
It's okay. You're 1, 2, 3.
Go for it, Dennis.
Okay, great. You're on record here of basically making, and I agree with you, but you're on record of saying, look, this false flag environment is really an industry. It is a cottage industry used not just by governments, but by corporations themselves, as part of putting into place this control matrix. Can you expand on how you view this cottage industry called false flags? Because you've highlighted in some of your other interviews, various companies are actually involved in this type of industry.
I would say that just to explain what a false flag is, it's an old naval term where in the old days, nations like England, Great Britain or Spain or Holland or whatever was traveling around with their marine forces and just invading, raping, plundering everywhere they came. But sometimes this could cause problems with trade agreements and so on. So somebody came up with the idea, why don't we do it like this instead? We put the enemy's flag on one of our own ships, then let that ship attack us so that instead of us being the attacker, we are the attacked one, we are the victim, and then that will justify us doing invasion, rape, plunder, whatever it is the plan was to start with. And not even it didn't even only sort of accomplish the target, but many times also the invader was applauded by, oh, it's so great that they managed to defend themselves and won the battle. But it was a total psyop because there was no enemy. It was only one brutal attack force in one direction. So another template that is very important to understand also is the old Roman template, problem, reaction, solution. The few in power can only be there with the help of fear. It is only through fear that they can control us, the masses. So they need us fearful, they need a boogeyman, and they need an outer enemy so that we will not look at them and understand what they're up to, but will believe that, oh, it's them over there that are attacking us. So the template goes like this. The few in power secretly create a problem. This problem is nowadays bomb attacks, terror attacks, mass shootings, virus scares, financial crashes, these type of things. And the idea is that this problem should cause a reaction, problem, reaction. The reaction they want is an emotional outcry of absolute panic from us saying, oh my God, we're under attack, we need protection. And then we will turn towards the few in power, thinking that they're there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who are doing it to us. And then they will then say, well, the only way we can defend you is, and boom, there comes the solution. And the solution every single time is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. So when you combine the two, false flag attacks and problem, reaction, solution, that is the recipe of what is ongoing at the moment in a massive scale. So what I believe...
When we talk about this, just real quick, I want to back up real quick and get your opinion on something on this problem, reaction, solution, trinity. One of the pillars of this trinity really revolves around this power elite being able to maintain absolute control over information. And what we see happening in a way, don't we, Ola, is that this part of their trinity, this pillar, is crumbling below their feet, or below their head, I guess we could say. And it's becoming increasingly more complicated now to pull off these false flags.
I hope so.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I really hope so, because otherwise all of these years that I put into it and many other researchers would have been for nothing. This is also the reason why I've done hundreds and hundreds of interviews trying to show the template they're using, because it's a very simple template that they pull off again and again and again and again, doing the exact same theme. And I believe that not only is it the same power elite behind more or less all the mayhem in the Western world at the moment. That's the way I see it after all of these years, at least. But not only is that, but also they're using the same team on a street level carrying these things out. And I would very much suggest that what we're seeing is not a whole world full of Muslim terrorists waking up screaming Allah Akbar and preparing bombs to blow us up, but a small mobile unit that is traveling from NATO country to NATO country in army planes, being transported in discrete army planes from Air Force base, NATO bases, American Air Force bases, and so on, from NATO country to NATO country, because it's only in NATO countries, more or less, that these operations are carried out at the moment. Then they land on either a military Air Force sort of landing places, whatever you call it, strips, or small discrete airports without flight towers and so on, so they can fly in and out without really having to show their existence, more or less. They come in undercover many times. And then they're being transported in buses to location where a drill, a security drill, is prepared. This drill is always there before these false flag attacks occur, because the drill is there for them to, with the help of people in key positions in the whatever country they're carrying it out, and in whatever location they're carrying it out, they need to control certain individuals, and they have now a very powerful network. So the drill is there. It's it's sort of announced, saying, "Oh, tomorrow we're going to have a security drill or a mass shooting drill or whatever it is for your protection." But the whole idea is for them to be able to close off streets in a certain area, to keep us away, to get vehicles in position, explosives in position, smoke bombs in position, crisis actors, everything, plus being able to rehearse the whole thing, plus being able to do a lot of footage and professional photos, press photos being taken as well during the drill. Then a few days later, or the day after, or so, boom, that's when the so-called real attack happens. But a lot of the live footage we're being told is live is not live. It's from the drill. And also a lot of the photos that is being spread in international media is not live. It's not taken at the event. It's taken during the drill, when they are in total control of everything, including lighting, and they can redo the photos again and again, super sharp and so on. Compared to when you see photos of the Patsy, they always point out it's super blurry, always super duper, so low quality. Also, a video footage on when you see that, oh, this has just happened, and you can see somebody, they do like always like a walking tour among the victims where the camera is pointed downwards. You can't see anything. It's super blurry once again. And very often you will see that it's not even real bodies that they are handling. Some of them are so-called cadavers or dummies and so on. I'm sorry about the delay. It's a little confusing.
Really? Okay, I'm sorry about that also. I don't know why that is. But I've been fighting feedback today for some reason. I don't know, man. Maybe because of you. Maybe they're targeting you. Not that I'm a conspiracy guy. You mentioned two elements to this, and you're mentioning the NATO side of it. You're talking about flying operatives via NATO aircraft, military aircraft, maybe it's unmarked aircraft. This, I believe, is quite credible. The second issue, though, you're talking about crisis actors on the scene. How big of an industry do you suspect that this is then? Because that's what you're describing here as an industry. How big is this industry throughout Europe?
It's growing big, big, big time. And it's not only Europe, it's in the States as well. It's in the States and in Canada and in Australia as well. These companies, and these, I think I'm starting to identify the head of the octopus when it comes to the operational part of this, what I call the global tour of terror. And that is a company called crisis-solutions.com. It is it's a UK-based company, but I believe that they are in a network, international network, where there's an American part of them called Crisis Cast. There's also one part of them that I suspect very much is totally intertwined with this, and it's in Australia. Then you have crisisactors.org. You got many new companies coming forward with where they supply you with everything from amputee actors, you know, people that have lost legs and arms and so in car accidents or so on, that are perfect to be used in these events, because they can, with a bit of makeup, they can look really realistic. They can supply you with, and they tell you on their websites, they can supply you with everything from coordinators, from psychological trainers, from directors, from fireworks, from you know, smoke bombs to explosives to everything that is needed. But what we're looking at, I would humbly suggest, is not terror, real terror nowadays. Most of the time what we're looking at are media events, but where the product is terror. It's exactly like if they were shooting a commercial for a headache pill or Coca-Cola, whatever. But in this case, the product that they're selling is terror. They are selling fear, and they're aiming at the black box in front of you. That is the outlet. So they don't care about people on location, what is seen there, or what the few witnesses that are there. They don't care about them at all. They focus on getting this pumped out through media that they control to a major part.
How much are alternative media outlets feeding this cycle of fear by reporting on these stories and then not really taking into account that they may be false? Personally, I see it too often. I don't report on any of these types of stories because I don't trust them. But do you see the alternative media helping to fuel this cycle of fear being brought about by these false flag operations?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some are aware of it and some are totally unaware of it. But I think it's super important to understand that it is the thing that they try to spread out there is fear. So this is why it's so important not to join that fear. That is also why I come from a point of love, of forgiveness and compassion, and how to transcend this whole situation into the next level. Because if I'm part of spreading fear as well, then I'm just doing them a favor. You know, so this is why I try to break the spell by showing this is how it's pulled off. And it's also like the Wizard of Oz. You know, it sounds like this Wizard of Oz is so powerful and so big and so invincible and so on. But once you pull the curtain and you see what's going on, you will see that it's a small group of mostly old guys, old men, with no honor, with no dignity. With the only talents they have is they can betray and kill and stab you in the back. And I mean, it's deep, deep shark waters. And there's this power that they say that they have. It's only through us. I mean, these old guys, we say that, oh, but they've got all this super duper high tech technology, weaponry and surveillance systems and all of these things. True, but it's not these old guys that are doing it. We are doing it to ourselves. That's the whole thing. It's incredible how we are doing it to ourselves. Because these old guys, your dad and father-in-law or whatever, if you give him a laptop and you say, oh my God, I've got a virus, can you please get rid of it? Or something like that, they wouldn't be able to install a program even. So these high-tech things, we are the ones doing it. So it's up to us to understand that really, when you identify the people in this, so-called New World Order, or the elite that they so poetically call themselves, I have words that is not so nice for them, they are actually in the thousands, in the thousands, around 8,000 I've heard, and I think that is quite a possible correct number. And we, the rest of us, are billions. And somebody said that it's really the proportions is like a grain of sand on a beach. That's how many they are. So for us to be so fearful and so down in the mud with our head, you know, down bowing for them and saying, oh my God, oh, I surrender. It's ridiculous. It is absolutely a joke.
But how do you spread that message to people that are getting arrested, you know, for online hate posting and the various agendas being brought against people really in the real life that are affecting real families and real people? How would you translate your message to very real actions being brought about or against people?
Nobody has said this is easy. Nope. I tell you, I've had death threats. What I do is, as soon as I can, I try to go on location where these things are carried out. I've predicted, I think, about 8 of them now before they happened on international radio. Often 1 month before they happen, I pointed out the exact location and more or less the time. it is shit scary, but not impossible, because the people that are protecting the few in power, all of the people in uniform, that many of them believing in what they're doing, not understanding that they are totally duped, many of them are very brutal, and the forces that are trying to push this on us, very, very brutal. I mean, the reason I live in Spain is because two of my friends was murdered, and I had a visit as well. So I know the power. I know I felt it, you know, I smelt, and it's very, very scary sometimes. At the same time, that doesn't make it impossible. And it is, the real fight is in our head, you know, because they can only control us in fear, and the fear is only inside your head and about the future, you know. So you have
like
to...
One of our commercials, man.
Sorry?
We have a commercial that runs with virtually that exact a message on it.
Okay.
No, really, I think you're right, though. The fear is within most people's heads, and then there's the real, those at the front lines, we do take hits for people. Your friends have taken some hits. I've taken hits. A lot of us have taken hits. It's not like it's risk-free, but for the masses out there who are only subject to the false flag, there's a metaphysical element to that. And you talked on a recent show about the karma involved and how you use this idea of karma and how things are projected ahead of time and what you are doing then to break these false flags down. Why don't you explain, as our audience likes these types of subjects, explain the karma and why we see so many signs everywhere when it comes to a false flag.
Well, it was about 4 or 5 years ago when I was very confused about what was going on, because I thought I saw things that were so clumsy, and so I couldn't understand how they are so skilled in certain areas, and then they leave, you know, evidence lying around that is just very sloppy. I couldn't get it. I didn't understand what was going on. And then an insider contacted me and said that the way the people in the New World Order, in this hierarchy, the way they understand the law of karma is that if they inform us about what they're going to do and we do not react, then the bad karma is on our shoulders, not theirs. And they are very, very afraid of this bad karma. So they have to show us what they're up to. And often it is hidden in plain sight. So once I was informed about that, I thought, what? That sounds totally weird, and what a twisted way of seeing the law of karma, but let me see if it fits. And from that point on, I started seeing, okay, they are actually putting this type of evidence in the heap of evidence after each attack. They're showing us what the next one is going to, where the next one is going to be. So from that point on, I thought, okay, fair enough, game on. I am going to track you down and expose everything I can by looking, and trying to interpret these clues. And it is almost like in a Dan Brown novel, you know, where each chapter ends with sort of like a clue for the next one. And so this is how I've been able to predict so many of them correctly.
What are some of the symbols you've picked up that might stand out and might be of interest?
No, it's not symbols. It's all kinds of strange things. Like, for instance, when the airport attack in Brussels was on the 1 year before the London Westminster Bridge attack that I predicted 1 month before it happened. At the airport attack, at that point, I was aware of these things, so I was looking everywhere. And in the footage that was released, I mean, there were like hundreds and hundreds of photos from this airport. So I was going through everything, you know, checking every little detail. And like I said, very often hidden right in your face, hidden in plain sight. So there was this photo of a cafe called, I think, the Petite Lille in the airport. And there was, you could see chairs and tables were turned over and so on. But there wasn't really any damage there because it wasn't where the bombs are said to have gone off. But on the wall behind it were the Eiffel Tower painted horizontal. I mean, a big, big wall painting, but the Eiffel Tower horizontal. I thought, what is that? How weird is that? And it's these type of things. So I went out straight out on international radio, said, here's yet another one, because by then I've started to see how they put these things out there. So I said, Eiffel Tower, Eiffel Tower, Eiffel Tower. And then just a week after, ISIS came out with a video where they threatened to bomb the Eiffel Tower. And the video was more or less identical with the horizontal Eiffel Tower lying down. And then on the same day as the Nice attack on the 14th of July, the Bastille Day in France, the freedom, the day of liberty, there was also an attack on the Eiffel Tower that most people don't know about. But the whole Eiffel Tower was covered in smoke and flames at the bottom. And they say that it was a truck with fireworks that turned on fire underneath the tower. That was it. But it was all lit up with smoke and flames and all of it. So this is just one example of how they leave these clues. And I can tell you about the recent clues as well. But I think it would be more important for me at the moment to just say what I think is going on at the moment.
Sure. And with that, hold it, because we're going to a break. Oh, Damagard, everybody. Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. It's June 24th for the archives. Back with more right after this. Everybody, welcome back. It's Savanch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, our guest, Ola Damagard. He's been awarded the Prague Peace Prize 2016. He's a noted author, international speaker, former journalist, and investigator, spending the last 30 years tracking down various false flag operations. In fact, he's considered one of the experts now on false flags. And Ola, welcome back to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you so much, Dennis.
So we were talking in the first half hour, Ola, about this operation. It's really a business. As you described it in another podcast, Sergeant Report, I think it was, you mentioned it's like a business. I like the way you described it, and perhaps you can do it again, is how we have this band of roving like rock star groups actually working in various cities. To pull off these false flags.
If I'm correct, and I think my track record is pretty good at this time, not bragging, but just seeing what's going on, I believe that gives me some weight to what I'm suggesting, because what I'm suggesting is that we are seeing the same mobile unit being transported from country to country, carrying out the exact same theme, meaning that it can even be the exact same people running around in SWAT team uniforms in Paris, as in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in different places in the States, as in Stockholm, and so on and so on. Same crisis actors, same people lying in the street bleeding, same people in police uniforms, same people driving the ambulances and so on. Because the thing is, just because they have a uniform on does not mean that they are real police, ambulance driver, firemen, and so on. And what I call them the global tour of terror. And I tell you, it is more or less the exact same setup as a rock band on tour. They need the exact same thing. You know, like roadies, more or less, but they have like bodyguards or bouncers that they're called, you know, to control the group. It's a small unit because the whole idea for them is to avoid problems with real victims and their families, because this is the thing, it's very, what they call messy when they terminate someone, as they beautiful, so poetically call it. I mean, when they brutally kill somebody, often they can have major problems, especially with the mothers of their victims. And if these victims are in the hundreds or thousands, then they have a major problem. So somewhere after 9/11, they started regrouping and started appearing with this team. And I think the Boston bombing and Sandy Hook were some of the first ones where we saw this action in motion, where there were no victims, no real victims at all. It was all staged, and where these units consist of directors, film directors, crisis actors, specialists in makeup, explosives, smoke bombs, but also coordinating the whole operation, marketing units that comes up with slogans and logos for the thing, also marketing agencies for product placement. They make extra money by having product placement involved in these so-called terror attacks. And then they're being transported from NATO country to NATO country. It's more or less only NATO countries that are hit with this global tour of terror. And and it's the exact same theme. I mean, Allah Akbar, they have an ISIS flag in their back pocket. They forget their passport on location. They get killed. The only blurry images of the guy that they blame on, and he's always more or less either he blows himself up or he's killed on location. And the whole thing, the same theme, you know, people are getting killed. It's get very emotional because they always hit women and children to get the emotions going. And then you have the candles and the flowers afterwards, and then the solution that they are being served right after these things happen. And it's every single time you can see that these things that are being presented as the solution have been prepared for a long time. You will see anti-terror budgets that are ready in 2 days, which normally takes like 4 months to get them prepared, but they're like 500 pages. And 2 days after this thing happened, boom, it's they're ready for the next step and so on. But
it sounds to me like you're saying there's a lot of coordination then with some NGOs and nonprofits out there within the political realm that are helping and coordinating with these efforts.
No,
touched on this issue at all?
These operations are very compartmentalized. It is extremely important that it's very few people, and that these people only know about their little task, their little part of the operation. Mm-hmm. Only very few people are allowed to know the whole big picture. So also the group of crisis actors are kept, for one thing, they have to sign confidentiality agreements, non-disclosure agreements and so on. So if they start spilling the beans, they would be sued from here to the moon. Also, I've been informed by CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum, who's a friend of mine, who was involved in false flags during his career. He says it's very, very easy to control a group like that, because the only thing you do, you pay them well. Money is not a problem at all. They're very well paid. Also, these GoFundMe campaigns that are started often the day before these incidents even happen are bringing in millions, actually, in some cases. So money is one thing that keeps them happy.
How much money is industry and government? How much budget is going into all of this?
In the operation themselves or afterwards?
If we take an operation like Sandy Hook, because a lot of us know that was BS. Yeah. How much money would have to go into pulling something like that off?
I wouldn't be able to say that, because Sandy Hook was quite a big operation. There was very many people involved, many, many crisis actors. Often you will see that the operations are much, much smaller than that. I think we're talking about a unit in maybe 50, 60 people in total. Sandy Hook was much, much bigger than that. There was one of the bigger ones that they pulled up with people from multiple different countries and so on. So I wouldn't be able to say that. I have heard different numbers, but when you see it, it's not the numbers are not so big to pull this whole thing off. It's just like, what would a film shoot like this cost. It's like a two-day film shoot for Sandy Hook, for instance. So you just count the people involved and see if this had been a war movie or if this had been a film shot at the Opera and you had needed like 500 extras to sit in the background, what would that cost? And it's the same here. It would cost a bit more, but not a lot more. So, but the big money is made afterwards when these false flags are used to generate war on innocent countries where they bring in billions of dollars in these attacks, and where the military industrial complex just gets incredible orders and so on. And the anti-terror, all the body scanners, the CCTV footage, all of these anti-terrorist weaponry and Robocop equipment and all of these things, that's where the big money is, not the operation itself. That is sort of, and these operations are often paid by, drug operations and so on. That this money is brought in from the back, sort of through the back door, and just financing it. But
so when we hear a lot of issues about government saying we need to clamp down on terror, stop funding of terror, we ought to really look at the budgets of these crisis companies and how they're actually getting their funds, shouldn't we?
No, you should say that's a really good idea to your government and say then stop arranging them, because they are the ones involved in it. This is the thing, we're talking about the enemy inside. It is your government, my government, and so on that are involved in this, doing it to us. It's state-sponsored terrorism. So this is, I mean, it's a, you need to find out about these things, because either we live in a world full of Muslim terrorists that just want to blow us up, option one. Option two, these are staged fake events that are there to freak us out so that we will accept the New World Order, meaning that then the people that step up afterwards to the microphone saying, oh my God, we need to stand united in the face of terror, we will not bend down, these are the people that are doing it to you. The people that are there in part of the investigation of these fake events, the people that are there taking care of the fake victims to these, they are involved, the judges are involved, the lawyers are involved, the key people in media that are reporting these things are involved. So you always need to, they will step forward, the key players, not that they are in any way or form in a position where they're the ones giving the orders, because the orders come from much higher up in the power pyramid, but they are involved.
Yeah. How many Israeli Jewish companies are involved in this? Because we hear a lot about the black budget, ecstasy, Israeli drug money, mainly from the ecstasy drug profits. How many Israeli companies or Jewish companies have you tracked into this network? They're the experts, let's be honest, Ola. When it comes to the media, they operate our media in America. 95% of it's owned by Jewish interests. We even say it's Israeli owned. So obviously, to pull it off, you need the media. So they're involved. How many actual operating companies are from, you think, Israel?
I wouldn't be able to say for sure. I know for 100% sure that the ICTS, the company that is in control of CCTV cameras in most airports and train stations and so on, they are 100% involved. And it's always their cameras that, for some magical reason, get shut down right before the operation and then goes back on right after. And I mean, if you had a product that never worked when they were supposed to work, I mean, they would fire your butt. But here, instead, these people are being used again and again and again. So they are in for sure. And also, when
now,
you
see, ICTS is an Israeli security company.
It is the company that are responsible for the CCTV cameras. Okay. When you study terrorism, I would say, I saw a quote by author Nicholas Kollerstrom. He said that to study terrorism without studying Mossad is like watching Hamlet without the prince. And I agree. It's like Mossad were the one that invented invented terrorism, more or less, and they are the masters of deceptions. But at the same time, you make a mistake if you say it's a Mossad operation, or it's the CIA, or it's the MI6. They work together. The thing is, these agencies look like they're separated on a street level, but the higher up you come in the power pyramid, they're totally in bed with each other, working. And I have this also confirmed by CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum, who used to work with all of them. And he said, it was like just another day at the office. We were all working together. And then depending on where the operation was carried out, we used people from other countries that couldn't be identified so easily in that country that was being attacked. So that's how, if the CIA needed help in the US, well, they brought in Mossad and MI6 and so on, carrying it out, because officially CIA is not allowed to do it in America. They still do, but they're not allowed. And so if it was in England, the MI6 would step back, be in the background, and let the other ones do it on their home turf. Same in France. The French would just step one step back and let the other people carry it out and so on. So I scratch your back, you scratch mine, and that's how it's done.
Obviously, the UK has been hit by a lot of quote-unquote, I don't report on them because I think they're probably, like you say, false flags. But of these UK events, especially the latest one, Finsbury, which is being used now by elites in the UK to clamp down on online, no doubt, online extremism. Have you tracked that down to a false flag at all? Because I haven't really followed that story. Is that a false flag in your opinion? Have you checked into it?
I have, but
Finsbury is where they mowed.
Finsbury is where this van hit the people outside the mosque. Greenfell Tower is the tower fire that you're talking about. And that one, yes, totally arson. I mean, the whole thing is set up. But that one we have to be very careful, because it feels like after keeping the same theme for a long, long time, suddenly with that one, it seems like they changed the modus operandi and are playing us in a different way. So, you know, it's like we really had to be aware of. And I found the clues for that one, but unfortunately I couldn't understand until it was too late. I also found the clues for the ones after Finbury attack, but also one day too late. So the clues are there, and I'm exposing it on my monthly newsletter. My website is lightonconspiracies.com, where I connect all of these things, because they are connected. And Dennis, if I can just say what I believe is going on, I would describe it like this. If you remember, some years ago, there were a series of revolutions in North African countries. They were called the Green Revolutions, and they were organized mostly through Facebook, and it was sort of like the new internet sensation, how social media could be involved in political changes in countries.
I was actually working with, not with, but I interviewed people within the U.S. State Department about their efforts in doing this operation, quite honestly. But yeah, you're correct. You are absolutely correct on that.
Because the thing was, it turned out afterwards that these were not local revolutions. They were there fired up by intelligence agencies and so on, who wanted to get rid of the people in top position in government and replace them with puppets. I mean, same old story, same old. They were called the Green Revolution. So the green, the color code for that one was the green. Then in the Ukraine, there were similar operations there. They went on the color code orange. I would say what we're seeing lately is with the color code pink for some reason. Most of the latest operations are connected with the color code pink. And in North Africa, where they wanted to destabilize these countries, they did it through a revolution. They sparked up these things and got revolutions going. But in Western Europe, we are too well off. You know, people are too okay financially. I mean, nobody's starving and nobody's angry enough to get a revolution going. So what they're trying to do here to destabilize Western Europe or Europe to accept the New World Order agenda into a one world fascist state with a one world army controlling us. They try to, instead of with revolutions, they try to destabilize country by country with these so-called alleged terror attacks. That's the one. And they go around in a circle. It's the same, the same, the same, the same, the same countries, the same targets, and so on. So I'll describe to you what countries it will happen to if they continue how they've been doing so far. In the U.S., it's mass shootings because that's where the weapons are. They want to make the weapons the problem, problem, reaction, solution, so that the solution will be...
We Americans, when they keep doing that, we just kind of smile and say, good luck with that one, guys. That's why we're keeping our weapons, because we do have mass shootings. So that one's not working out so well.
No,
but they keep trying.
Yeah, but excellent that you're aware of it. So, because there's no mass shootings in Europe, because there is no, that's not where the weapons are, so that's not a problem. Anyway, so here, they're trying to, the countries that are hit in a circular motion is UK, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Sweden, Turkey. Let me see if I forgot anyone. Sometimes they use Spain and Italy, but not very often. But mostly it's these countries again and again and again and again. And the targets they are aiming at are location that has a national value, an emotional value, so that it also involves an interest for tourism and so on. Because what they're trying to get is the emotion. They're out for the emotional reaction. So it would be things that have a national value, like the Twin Towers, the Statue of Liberty, Times Square in the U.S., Big Ben, the Eiffel Tower, Acropolis, Colosseum. Venice. You got now just a few days ago they hit the White Cliffs of Dover, which were very very. Important during the Second World War. They have these referrals to the Second World War all the time. Now, exactly 77 years after when they happened. And so it will either be that some place that gets a lot of emotional attention if it's hit, or it will be center for communications. It will be airports, train stations, or vessels, you know, like trains, planes, ferries, and
Ola Dominguez, his website one last time, Ola, is
quickly lightonconspiracies.com.
All right, and the good thing about 1 hour is we get to invite you back, because you never have enough time. So Ola, thanks for coming in, appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Dennis. Anytime you want me back, I'm here.
All right, everybody, Aman Noon in the Edge Inside Intelligent Media.